Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I hope you've enjoyed this program. If you couldn't tune in the beginning, you can always go to our archives. I'd like to mention again, this show is being broadcast, pre-broadcast. Today is Wednesday the 16th, in fear of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, 2024. But we're doing it because we had to. I have to go to a wedding this weekend. And our staff that we have coming on right now have been so gracious to modify their schedules so they come in here and do this program. But anyway, I'd like to turn the ball over. We got the Bitter Ender himself coming in today. He always has a great program. He is the Blood River Radio professor, and we're so honored and privileged to have him come on this show. That's for sure, this broadcast, rather. We also have Miss Braveheart. She's continuing on to the third hour. It's good. This third hour is going to be pretty much the Bitter Ender and Braveheart. I'm just going to bring them in and out of the breaks. And so right off the bat, we're going to go to Miss Braveheart. She's going to talk about her program. She's on RBN, like we mentioned that before, Republic Broadcasting Network, which is a great network. They were the ones I used to listen to, Officer Jack McLam, Lieutenant Colonel James Bogue Wright used to be on that program. They had a wonderful program. But anyway, go ahead, Sister Braveheart.
Thanks, Eddie, for that opportunity to plug the Republic Broadcasting Network. I've had the great privilege of having my own show on that for the last 3.5 months already now. It's a weekly 1 hour. What's that? Sorry?
I can't believe it's been 3.5 months. Time's just so flies.
June 29th was my first episode, and it's a 1 hour weekly program on Saturdays, 5 p.m. Pacific, so that would be 8 p.m. Eastern time. And then the website for the Republic Broadcasting Network is republicbroadcasting.org, and you can listen live there anytime. There's many interesting folks over there. Or you could just visit the archives there and dig out whatever you want to listen to there. So, this Saturday, I'm actually quite excited to have a very familiar name to all of us here on Blood River Radio. Nancy Hitt is going to be my guest this Saturday. And, well, by the time you're hearing this, that's just a couple of hours away now.
Yes.
Then last week's guest was Jürgen Neumann. He's the fellow who was Ernst Zundel's right-hand man and videographer during the course of decades of Ernst Zundel's very important work that he did. I think he was really one of the greats in terms of exposing the lies of World War II, that, you know, the mainstream narrative that we're supposed to all believe about those 6 million who were gassed in gas chambers by those evil Germans. And, you know, he through his work shone the light on that, and was of course persecuted, prosecuted, and spent some years in jail and whatnot. But Jürgen Neumann, he worked with him, and he's still very, very, very active uploading stuff. If you go to BitChute and look up John Robinson 101, all one word, you'll find his channel, and he's uploading daily older videos, interviews. Ernst Zundel, he used to have a radio show, A Voice of Freedom, and all kinds of activity there, and really good stuff, really important. And it's still important. If people say, oh, that's so long ago, it doesn't matter anymore, well, guess what? It's very relevant to our current times, because these lies and the Holocaust, I still maintain that's the linchpin lie. This is what Jewish power resides on. And actually today's topic that Gene, and like you say, Eddie, the historian for, and I would say, I have to say in this case, he's not like the average university professor who they're all controlled by, you know, the mainstream Orthodox narrative. And I know, exactly how they keep those professors in line. You know, they get smeared and fired if they step out of line at all. But anyway, I'm really looking forward to discussing today's topic. It's a segue from the last time we talked about the similarities and parallels.
Sister Monica, let me ask you one quick question.
Yeah.
How do you spell, now, John Robinson, does he spell it? I forgot. I used to know. Is it Robinson? Is that how he spells it? And is it 101 numerical, like the Arabic numbers?
Yeah.
Or is it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, numerical. That's right. John Robinson 101.
Great,
but anyway, on BitChute. You go to BitChute.
Oh, BitChute. Okay.
That's a video platform.
Oh, I got
sort of
you,
like
okay.
YouTube, except YouTube is kind of nicknamed YouTube very, very aptly because they don't allow real truth about world. Yeah. So anyway, so
thank
it's
you.
Just.
I hope didn't want to interrupt you, but I want the listeners to know how to get there.
Yeah. Anyway, so then, we're going to talk about the parallels after the war between the Confederate South and Germany. Last time we talked about during the respective wars and those, you know, the so-called civil war in the United States, which wasn't at all, but and in Germany, the war and so many parallels. And then now we're going to talk about after those wars, the parallels between those two places and how they handled that. So but Gene is going to be the main historian on that. But just before I quit talking, and I just want to also put a plug in, since you invited me to put a plug in for various things, that there's the truthandjusticeforgermans.com website, and you know, we post articles and stuff there, and also we also have a BitChute channel and an Odyssey channel, so there's things being uploaded there that are good videos and sort of history lessons, I guess you could say. Okay, I'm going to pass it over. Back
you say
to you.
.com. One last thing. Truthandjusticeforgermans.com.
Yes.
Thank you, Sister Mark.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you, Monica, and thank you for getting all the information out there. I know you do a lot of research and have some great, going to have some great speakers and guests, mm-hmm. and I hope our listeners will have written all of that down and be able to tune in to you. We talked just a little bit. Our last partnership, we did a comparison between the U.S. war crimes against the Southern and German civilians, and we referred back to an article by Dr. Charles Weber in the May-June issue of the Barnes Review, and he was showing photographs of Richmond, Columbia, South Carolina, Atlanta, where the civilians were kicked out and Sherman burned the city, and then Jackson, Mississippi, where they burned it twice. They didn't burn it enough the first time, and they laughed about it and called it Chimneyville, because that was the only thing that was left, brick and stone chimneys. And then what happened to Germany, the firebombing of Dresden and Hamburg, and the U.S. government cannot stand the truth. And people that speak the truth, as you well know, are prosecuted and attacked and thrown into prison, or, you know, they inform the Germans to do the dirty work for them when you were over there. And it got even worse. You know, our own government, U.S. government, murdered American General George Patton after the war, because General Patton spoke up and he said, you know, we butchered the wrong hog. We should have been fighting on the side of the Germans against the Bolsheviks. And that's why why Patton had that mysterious car crash that supposedly killed him. But I've seen pictures of the car, and it's like two people back out of a parking spot at the mall at the same time and bump into each other, and that's about it. So anyway, so that's how we sort of preview this and set it up. And as Monica said, we're going to talk a little bit about what happened after the war in the American South and what happened to the German officers and German civilians after the war in Europe. And in this country, it was called Reconstruction, and the better term would have been Redestruction. Now, the war lasted on the South, the war that Lincoln declared on the South and sent his army in the South. And this has always bugged me. They talk about how the United States is such a great democracy. How can you be a democracy when you force people at the point of a gun to be a part of your country. You know, I always remind our critics, you know, we voted in legitimate elections to leave the Union, and then we voted again to join the seven states, to join the Confederate States of America and form a new country. And then we were invaded, and when Lincoln announced he was going to invade these states and force them, six more states, including the state of Tennessee, our state, said, heck no, we're not doing that. We're going to defend other southern states. So we've got 13 states that voted to leave the Union, but they're forced back into the good old U.S. of A. at gunpoint. So what kind of democracy is that?
Yeah, and we never learned that in school. I just want to break it to you, Gene. We never learned that in school or grade school, nor did I learn it in any other, you know, history classes that I might have taken at university, that about the legitimate voting to secede.
Huh, exactly.
Funny that. Yeah.
Well, we were guaranteed that when they ratified the Constitution, which technically was illegal. The 13 individual colonies were all granted 13 separate individual treaties with the British government at the end of the war for independence, or American Revolution, whatever you want to call it. And Great Britain signed 13 separate documents because they recognized 13 colonies as 13 separate nations. And then they joined together after the war to form a protective country. And we'll get into that after the break.
Be right back, folks. Hang on to your seats.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an Immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
In the medical field, IT security is crucial. Our highly skilled consultants are HIPAA certified and have 20 plus years of experience servicing medical clinics, billing and supply companies. We offer comprehensive endpoint protection, guarding your computers and servers against all stages of threats. And with our 24/7 monitoring services, you'll never worry about extensive downtime again. Ready to level up your IT support? Call 801-706-6980 today and discover how great IT services can be with Managed IT Services.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I might be getting ahead of myself, but I'm just going to mention one thing. I'm very, very proud of the people that have been in our family here. And Sister Monica, I'd just like to let this out. Her parents grew up in Germany. They were in Germany during this horrible war of genocide perpetrated against the Germans. Her dad, and I'm so proud to have her own. I wish I could speak to her dad. He served in the German military in the during this horrible war. If I'm not mistaken, he had to serve time in one of Eisenhower's death camps. And I'm going to shut up and go back to our people. I guess it's back to you, isn't it, Bitterender?
Okay. Yes, and I'm going to cut mine short. I want to hear Monica's full story here. This, and she was talking about her father serving, trying to go to medical school, and then serving on the front lines. I guess that's supposed to make us horrible enemies, because my dad was in the U.S. Army during the war. He was old when the war came along, and he wasn't drafted right at first, but they drafted him later on, and he wore glasses, and he wasn't in real good shape. So he even joked about it and said that they drafted him to relieve a woman for combat, a Women's Army Corps. So that was the big saying, that they got women to serve to relieve a man for combat. And my dad said, no, in his case, he was so bad off as the other way around. They drafted him to relieve a woman for combat. So
now anyhow, I know where you get your sense of humor, Bitterender.
Well, yeah, he did.
You've got a hell of a sense of humor, brother. I know where you
got. So anyway, we'll briefly cover the South during Reconstruction. And the war lasted from 1861 to 1865. But Reconstruction, or we call it Redestruction, lasted 12 years, from 1865 to 1877. And this covered all parts of the South. And if you look at a map of where the battles were fought, they were fought mostly along railroad lines and rivers, because they needed those to supply the armies. But Reconstruction caught every corner of the South, and it was just brutal. They passed laws that no Southerners were allowed in Congress. They could only have phony elections down here, and that's where we got so many blacks from the South that were in Congress, in the U.S. Congress. They were illiterate. They couldn't read, but white Southerners couldn't vote. And so, of course, the carpetbaggers that had come down here in the U.S. military, they elected these blacks and sent them off to Congress or into the state houses in these Southern capitals. And that's why that the Southern states were robbed of what little money they had after the war. It was because of the horrible governments that were imposed on the South. They sent the Yankee carpetbaggers, we called them carpetbaggers, they were people that came down here to just rob and steal whatever hadn't been taken away by the war. They passed the Franchise Act, where Southern whites couldn't vote. So that meant you couldn't vote for a sheriff, you couldn't vote for a tax assessor, and you were at the mercy of the federal occupying army. And the Northern government, the radical Republicans, and back then the Republican Party was the nutcase party, and the Democrats were the conservative party. But the Democrats were thrown out of Congress, and you couldn't have any Southern Democrats in Congress to make any of the laws. And so what happened was, we had no one to stand up for us in Congress. If you couldn't vote for a sheriff or a tax assessor or anything, they could steal all your property from you. And that's why they had to form vigilante groups to protect themselves, and especially protect the women. And they talk about that being so horrible today, but the Republicans really wanted to drive a wedge between the whites and blacks in the South. And they were afraid that if they didn't get the whites and blacks to start hating each other, all of these blacks that now were free from slavery and were given the right to vote by the 15th Amendment to the Constitution, they would vote with their neighbors, the Southern whites that they'd grown up with their whole life. And then the boys had gone fishing together and played together. And then when the war came along, a lot of the blacks joined the Confederate Army because their neighbors, the white boys that they'd grown up with, were joining the Confederate Army. And they'd say, oh, no, that never happened. That never happened. Check the records for pension applications. And the Southern states, as little as they had, would still try to pay a few dollars to the veterans after the war. And there were blacks that applied for and got pensions after the war for service in the Confederate Army. But anyway, they try to cover that up. So this is what was happening to the South after the war. And I'm going to turn it over to Monica and let her tell you what was happening to the German civilians and the German soldiers that had served during the war, and how the great U.S. of A. government pulled all kind of dirty stunts on them instead of trying to honor somebody as an honorable opponent. They used this opportunity at the defeat of Germany to just put our boot heel on their neck and grind the face of the German soldiers and the German people right down into the dirt. And this is really one of the most despicable things that the U.S. government and the U.S. military have done. So, Monica, please take it.
Okay, thanks, Gene. So I'm not sure how long this lasted, but it was official American policy, Morgenthau Plan and all that, to annihilate the Germans, like, well after the war, was it not? I think that lasted for quite a few years, that it was still official policy.
Oh, yeah, Morgan, that you mentioned that, that Morgenthau policy is, and Morgenthau, I think he was somewhat Yiddish, or maybe he was Irish, I don't know what, but anyway, he said Germans should be just exterminated, civilians, soldiers, men, women, children, everything. The Morgenthau Plan. That was it.
Right. And he wasn't the only one that said the Germans should be exterminated, but he was in a high position in government. So that is really the critical part there. So it was actual policy, government policy, that the German people should be obliterated. Then there was that Jew from New York that wrote the book, Germany Must Perish, and, you know, it proposed that they get all sterilized, all the men get sterilized, hire 20,000 surgeons to do this over the course of I don't know how many years, and voila, no more Germans. I mean, those are just two. There were others too that said, yeah, Germans have to be annihilated, and that's why the psychological warfare continued to this day with the lies of the Holohoax and all that. But anyway, I shouldn't get off topic too much here, but what happened after the war? How many people really know that more Germans died after World War II than during World War II? I mean, that just blows my mind, just that alone, because an awful lot died during World War II between the soldiers and all the civilians who were bombed right in their cities, and it was many, many cities were firebombed during the war because it was a deliberate strategy of targeting civilians with this Allied firebombing, not just Dresden, not just Hamburg, not just Cologne, but I don't know, I think it was 160 cities, something like that. Anyway, that just got bombed and bombed and bombed, and then, of course, all the soldiers at the fronts and then hunger during, especially during the final part of the war. But then after the war, okay, so you had mentioned the POW camps. I'll come back to that, but I'll just name some of the other things. The rapes that took place of women. I mean, I think millions of women were raped and many died from these, you know, gang rapes, mass rapes. And then the expulsions. This was the largest in our history that we know about, largest human expulsion ever took place of the Germans from their former German territories that then became part of Poland, part of Czechoslovakia, various regions, that was all German territory. And Germany had already been shrunk, I think, after World War One. Isn't that correct? Am I right,
yes, ma'am,
on that, Gene?
And this is something that people need to understand. The wonderful allies and our wonderful ally, the communist Bolsheviks, we, just like you said, they rounded up all of these German civilians, soldiers, anybody that they even thought was had any German ancestry, and turned them over to the Russians, the Soviets. And they loaded them up and shipped them off to the work camps in Siberia and the gulags. A tiny fraction of 1% ever made it back to Germany. They were worked
thanks,
to death.
Thanks for reminding me about that, because I momentarily didn't have that at the top of my mind, that many Germans ended up in those gulags, worked to death. So, yeah, and then you had mentioned the Nuremberg trials. I'm not sure if that was in the break or.
Oh, yeah.
On,
yeah.
On
I want,
air,
I'd like for you to cover that, too. We've all heard about that. But what a farce that was as a
what
trial.
What a farce. What a farce. Exactly. And I guess we'll pick it up there after the break here.
People, I'm really enjoying this historical program. I really am. And our people, especially our young people, need to hear every word of this. So listen, if you got any kids out there, and most programs say, oh, we can't listen, kids don't need to hear this. The damn kids are the ones who really need to hear this. Be right back, folks.
Proclaiming liberty. liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Now have more credit card debt than at any time in history, owing a staggering $1.3 trillion collectively. What happens when most people can't pay their bills? Well, the U.S. economy is clearly moving into uncertain territory. That's why more Christians are turning to gold just for their peace of mind. I'm Lance Wallnau, Christian news analyst with a 30-year track record of predicting trends. The Bible tells us that gold is a time-tested store of value that can protect your God-given assets through almost anything, including America's historic debt bubble. And here's the good news. You can own gold through your 401k or IRA. My friends at Birch Gold Group can help you buy gold for your retirement account, tax-free and penalty-free. To learn more, text the word FAITH to 989898 for an info kit from Birch Gold that's entirely free, zero cost or obligation. Text that next step right now and take it. Text FAITH to the number 989898 for your free info kit. That's FAITH to 989898.
We're rapidly approaching the holiday shopping season.
The National Retail Federation says it expects consumers to spend more during the upcoming holiday season, but overall growth in sales will be slower than last year due to concerns over persistent inflation. Matt Shea is the organization's CEO and president.
Consumers continue to show resilience and they show strength in their spending.
While consumers have been fueling the economy, Shea says shoppers have high interest rates and lingering inflation on their minds. With Thanksgiving falling on November 28th, there also will be six fewer days between the holiday and Christmas Day to go shopping. I'm Shelley Adler.
United Airlines says its third quarter profit fell 15% from a year ago, but revenue trends have now improved. That's thanks to low fare carriers scaling back their growth plans. Breaking news and analysis at townhall.com. A new study on helmet laws and fatal motorcycle crashes.
A new study released by the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety suggests that some 20,000 motorcyclists who've died in crashes since the mid-1970s would have survived if there had been stronger helmet laws. The nonprofit institute pushes for stricter state road safety laws and seeks to reduce the harm from motor vehicle crashes. The organization says that from 1976 to 2022, the lives of 22,058 motorcyclists could have been saved if every state had required all riders to wear helmets. Only 17 states and the District of Columbia have such laws in place. I'm Donna Water.
Tom Brady's purchase of a minority stock in the Las Vegas Raiders has been approved by NFL team owners. The seven-time Super Bowl champion now with 5% control of the Raiders. More on these stories at townhall.com. I'm John Scott.
Being this is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Dear Blood River Radio family, we're going to go right back. Without further ado, going to go back I think, the bitter ender. No, what about
well,
Sister
we,
Monica? Sister
Monica. Okay, well, we're talking about the plan, the Morgenthau plan to exterminate Germans, men, women, children, everybody, and have the men sterilized and just wipe German population off the map. And going back to the South after the war, Union General Sherman and some of the members of Congress, the United States Congress, agreed with Sherman when he wrote this, and he said, Southerners must be exterminated. Their homes and cities destroyed, their lands plowed under, and the entire region repopulated with European immigrants. And Thaddeus Stevens and the senator from Ohio West and some of the others, and Lincoln's cabinet members that were now under Johnson after Lincoln got executed for war crimes. You know, that's an interesting point. Abraham Lincoln was the only leader of a victorious country that I can ever remember that got executed for war crimes. And that's one of the reasons Booth shot him, was because of what he had done to the civilians in the South. Now, they try to portray John Wilkes Booth as this crazy guy, but he was seeking revenge for what Lincoln had done to the Southern civilians during the war. But anyway, that's the tie. We keep going back and forth between German civilians and German former soldiers and Southern civilians and former Southern soldiers. So, Monica, go right back ahead and bring us up to speed on what was going on in Germany.
And Sister Monica, I'd just like to tune in and say,
go ahead.
Who was behind Lincoln's war against the South? Basically, when Lincoln said he thought he had the bankers, and I'll say Jew bankers in his rear, who were more dangerous to him than the rebel armies in the front. And who was this Morgenthau guy that wanted to destroy Germany? All these people, were they Jews, or am I just anti-Semitic? But go ahead, Sister Monica.
Are you just anti-Semitic? I think you have the capacity to observe and notice patterns, Eddie, which when we do that, we just automatically become anti-Semitic. But what does anti-Semitic mean? It just means pointing out the truth about the Jews and what they're doing and who owns the banks and who owns the media and who's, pulling the puppet strings. That's all. So we should be proudly anti-Semitic. Okay, so we were talking about the Nuremberg trials, which were a sham. And yet, for some reason, people hold up the Nuremberg trials as something great, but they're obviously misinformed about what actually happened there. Any quote-unquote confessions that were spoken came about by torture. I mean, the unbelievable torture. In some cases, they smashed the testicles of all these men. I mean, beyond recognition it's just indescribable. So if anybody brings up, the Nuremberg trials, that proves that the Holocaust happened because, they confessed to it. Well, you really, really need to do some research into what actually happened at the Nuremberg trials. And my understanding of it is that there were many people in high places in the United States that absolutely objected to what was going on. They distanced themselves from it. They publicly spoke against these. Perhaps you can chime in on that, Gene?
Yes, that is true. The entire United States government and the United States military wasn't corrupt. Unfortunately, the leadership was. And unfortunately, that's what's happening to our country here today. Not everybody in the United States is a dirty, rotten, lying, thieving rat, but our leadership certainly is. And we get smeared with the same brush because of the worthless government we have in Washington, D.C. But you're exactly right. That was happening back then. But just like I said about General Patton, when they spoke up, they got rid of him. They either got kicked out of the Army or they wouldn't get promoted. Or in Patton's case, they had him killed because
That's right.
He was a firebrand. He'd say whatever he thought. And, he was mad because they wouldn't turn him loose to break in across Germany and go right straight into Berlin. The war would have been over 6 months earlier, and the Russians would not have had all of Eastern Europe. But Eisenhower and Roosevelt had cut a deal with the Russians, so they were going to, in Yalta, they had made a deal to let them come in and take over all of Eastern Europe. So they stopped Patton, wouldn't give him supplies, wouldn't give him gasoline, wouldn't give him anything, and he was just stuck. And, he would have fought against the Germans, but he would have gotten the war over about 6 months earlier. And how many lives would have been saved if he'd gone in there and stopped the Russians from taking over Eastern Europe? So you were talking about the Nuremberg trials and what a joke that was. Well, the same thing happened to the South. The U.S. government wanted to put all of the Southern leaders like Robert E. Lee and Jefferson Davis and Thomas Jackson and all of the leaders of the Confederate military, besides President Davis, on trial as traitors and have them executed. And some of them had to get out of the country. It was so bad. Joe Shelby was a cavalry officer across the Mississippi, and he was forced all the way down into Texas, and he went across the Rio Grande River into Mexico. And they said when it did, he took their flag, wrapped it up in rocks, and buried it in the Rio Grande. And when he got across the river into Mexico, he threw his sword back into the Rio Grande that he wouldn't surrender. And I didn't know exactly where this happened until this last year. They were talking about all these illegals coming across at Eagle Pass, Texas, from Mexico into Texas. And Governor Abbott shut down that part because they're coming into a Texas-owned state park, Shelby Park. And I looked it up. Yes, that Shelby Park was named for Confederate General Joe Shelby, where he crossed from Texas into Mexico after the war. And I've often said, if an illegal ever found Joe Shelby's sword in the Rio Grande River, we'd let that illegal come into the States if he could bring General Shelby's sword back with it. Anyway, so that was happening. And the one example I'd like to give, and then I'll turn the program back over to you, is how many officers they did try to hang and kill off after the war. President Davis was captured. They chained him to the dungeon at Fort Monroe off the coast of Virginia, and they kept a light on in his cell, and they had a guard trampling up and down outside and stomping and making noise so he couldn't sleep. They were hoping he was going to die in prison. They were going to try him for treason, for being head of a country that fought against the United States, but they couldn't figure out what charges they were going to bring against him. And finally, they had to release him after 2 years because Chief Justice Taney of the Supreme Court said, you can't prove that secession was illegal. So how are you going to put this man on trial and convict him and execute him for something that you can't prove was illegal? So they finally had to let him go. But this is the one that they, the officer that they did kill. There was a commandant of the Confederate prisoner of war camp down in South Georgia at Andersonville. His name was Henry Wirz, W-I-R-Z. He was a immigrant into this country from Switzerland, and he volunteered for the Confederate Army at the first of the war, and he was severely wounded at one of the early battles at Gaines Mill. His right arm was useless for the rest of his life and just hung limp. So since he couldn't serve in the field, they put him as commandant of this prisoner of war camp, which was designed for about 300 prisoners. But Lincoln, late in the war, great Abraham Lincoln, His Holiness Saint Abraham the Pious, stopped the prisoner exchange. So now the South was flooded with all these Northern prisoners, Union prisoners. The South was starving. The Federal armies had smashed the railroads, burned the bridges, destroyed the farms, slaughtered the livestock wherever they were. The South couldn't feed themselves, so they couldn't feed these prisoners. And Captain Wirz even admitted that and said, look, you've captured Jacksonville, Florida, which was the closest city to South Georgia and this prison. Said, send over food and medicine and send it with the Sanitary Commission, which is the forerunner of the Red Cross. Send it with the Sanitary Commission so you can make sure that it goes to your prisoners. Lincoln wouldn't do it. So the war's over. Wirz didn't try to run away. He gave him a record of all the prisoners that had died, where they were buried there, turned it over to the federal authorities. They went ballistic when they found out how many soldiers had, U.S. soldiers had died in this prisoner of war camp. And what they never did was they never talked about how bad it was on the guards. The guards got the same rations as the prisoners, and they looked like skeletons by the end of the war, too. So they couldn't blame Lincoln because Lincoln had just been whacked and taken out. So they had to blame somebody. So they put Major Wirz or Captain Wirz on trial in Washington, D.C. And of course, he was found guilty. And just read a part of this article about it. And Captain Henry Wirz, commandant of Andersonville Prison for 14 months, was hanged on November 10, 1865, after a trial in Washington, D.C. Many historians have said that this was the most unfair trial ever held in the United States. And it gets worse. Afterwards, the barbaric Yankees, and we'll tell what they did with his body after the break.
And basically the same Jews did it about 100 years later in Germany at Nuremberg. Yep. Be right back, folks.
Have you ever heard of Loving Liberty Ladies? Well, the Loving Liberty Ladies are here to help you learn our American heritage and the way it affects today's society. The Loving Liberty Ladies also have a discussion guide called Proclaim Liberty. And with this guide, you can start your own group in your hometown. Get yours today on our website at lovingliberty.net. Look for our lesson supplements, too. They're free. To hear all the special offers and to join the fight for freedom and liberty, please go to lovingliberty.net.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Dear Blood River Radio family, going to the last segment, I'd just like to point out one more time that the bitter ender was pointing out how the commander of the Southern prisoner of war camp, I think Anderson Dill, you said, how he was tried and executed. And if you fast forward roughly 80 years later, the same people, the grandchildren, great-grandchildren of these Jews that executed that honorable Southerner, they were over here torturing the Germans, and they had their fake trial at Nuremberg. With that, go ahead, Bitter Ender.
Okay, right before the break, we were talking about Captain Henry Wirtz, who's commandant of the Andersonville prison camp, and of course he was tried. Of course he was found guilty, and they brought in witnesses that lied. They talked about how they saw him beating prisoners, and as we said, his right arm was so severely wounded in the first of the war that they took him out as a field commander, and he couldn't even raise his right arm. Yet they said they saw him beating prisoners with his right arm. Anyway, he was found guilty, of course, hanged in Washington, D.C., and he said it was the most unfair trial ever held in the United States. And this is the real – well, there are two things here, the real kicker. The night before his execution, they came to him and they said, all right, we'll cut a deal with you. We'll let you go if you will say that Confederate President Jefferson Davis ordered you to torture and withhold food from these prisoners and mistreat the prisoners, that you were under orders from President Jefferson Davis, because they had Davis chained to the dungeon in Fort Monroe. They couldn't think up anything to try him with. So that if they could get a confession out of Captain Wirtz, they would have something to hang Jefferson Davis with. So when they made that offer to Wirtz, he said, you mean I can be free if I condemn President Davis? And they said, yep, we'll let you go tomorrow. And he said, then I'm a dead man. He wouldn't do it. And after
he was executed
afterwards, the barbaric Yankees cut his head, arms, and legs off and exhibited the bones about the country. It took his attorney 4 years to get enough of the bones back together to have a burial at Mount Olivet Cemetery in Washington. And Nancy Hitt said this, some of the bones are still on exhibit in some government, I don't know, museum, medical museum or something. I remember Nancy talking about that. So that's still going on to this day. So anyway, that's what happened to our people after the war. And Nancy, got my wrong fighting sister there. Monica, I'll turn it back over to you to continue the parallel of what happened to the Germans after the war and the parallel of what happened to Southerners after the war.
Yeah, one thing that I didn't mention yet on air here, and Eddie, you kind of reminded me of it by talking about, 80 years later, it was the great-grandchildren or the grandchildren of those who did those trials in the American South, those totally unfair, completely illegitimate trials, and they did it to the Germans. And, something that a lot of people perhaps don't know, they're not aware that out of the, I don't know, it was in the 300s, the number of staff involved in the Nuremberg trials in Germany, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jean, but some roughly, okay, the majority were Jews. Imagine that. Like, who really did win the war, World War II? I would say if you've got the majority of people who are running these sham trials afterwards, they are the Jews. Like, how does that happen when, I don't know, didn't the Germans gas 6 million of them and exterminate, like, didn't they go about to exterminate them all? Or how is it that they're running these trials
afterwards? I'll tell you exactly how it happened. Very, very few of the Jews would be in a combat unit. And I saw this in Vietnam. Now, they were in Vietnam, but they were doctors or lawyers in the JAG Corps. And I never once saw a Jew go out in the bush, out in the field, you know, on a patrol up in the mountains or whatever. And they'll say, oh, we were in Vietnam. We were right there. Yeah, they were. But they were back in the rear with the gear, as doctors or lawyers or supply or somewhere back there. But the guys that had to throw on the packs and carry all the ammunition and hump the hills, you know, busting your nose going up and busting your rear end coming down, I never saw one out there in the bush. And that was, you know, that was just in the 3rd Marine Division in the 11th Battalion. But, you know, I can't say that was true for everybody, Army and all the other combat units there, but I never saw one out in the bush.
You're just anti-Semitic, Gene.
Yeah, it just corroborates what so many have said, and basically the Jews have proven that to us themselves, that their doctors will provide their people with these notes that you're exempt from the draft and this and that, right? I mean, the Jews don't like to fight the wars themselves. They get the Gentiles to fight wars on their behalf. And, you know, back to the parallels between the American South and what happened there and Germany, a huge parallel is this. It's the lies and deceptions that have been told ever since. Like, why is it that all this history that you're talking about, Gene, I certainly did not hear that in any mainstream, you know, educational system official textbooks or whatever. No way. Like, you have to dig for this. You have to read books that are not exactly the mainstream published books, you know, but there are books out there that tell the true history, and it's really important for us to have physical books. I know a lot of people like to read stuff online, but I encourage people to get physical books that tell the truth. I think the more books exist in the more places, the better the chance that the true history will come through, you know, whatever turmoil is facing us. And that's a big parallel between what happened to the American South and to Germany, is the lies, the demonization of the people, and so to themselves too, so that they become self-hating. So many of our own people have become self-hating. I mean, the Germans, I'm telling you, the people in that are maybe just a slightly younger than me, that generation got hit the hardest, and are they ever self-hating to the point that, I mean, I had somebody contact me recently, mother is pretty much exactly my age, and she thinks that what happened in Dresden was good, that the Germans deserved that because Damn. Of how bad they were. Can you imagine that? This is a German
good
woman
night.
From Germany. She had immigrated to the United States, I believe, and she thinks that that was good, what happened to Dresden, because the Germans deserved it. Like, this is the deception, the lies, and that has happened with the American South too. I don't know nearly as much about that history as I do now that I've, you know, learned a true history about the Holocaust and that never happened and all those things. But my understanding of that is that there's a lot of people in the American South that are also like white people who are kind of self-hating and
they're brainwashed
actively.
They're brainwashed. Yeah, brainwashed.
Exactly.
Propaganda. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
They all they can think about is slavery, that was the only cause of the war, and they don't see the money issue in it. And they would never read that book by Charles Adams, who was a Northerner. And he was going to write the obligatory book on slavery and why it caused. He started studying it, and I will give him credit for this. He got into his studies. He said, whoa, wait a minute, back it up. It wasn't about slavery. It was about money, because the South had the money, and Lincoln and the Northerners needed the money from tariffs and taxes to operate the federal government. And so the war against the South was like every war since way back when Ugog hit Mugog over the head with a dinosaur bone out in front of the cave is about money. And, you know, that's why Churchill wanted to attack Germany. He needed an excuse to attack Germany because Hitler had brought Germany out of the Depression while Britain and the United States were still stuck in the Depression, and he didn't want Germany as an economic rival of Great Britain. So he would sacrifice the lives of millions of young boys and civilians just to keep Germany from being an economic rival of Great Britain. How horrible is that? Get all these people killed for money. But, you know, guess who controls the money and who is controlling Churchill, who is a drunken bum and about ready to lose his family home. And they made a deal with him that, you know, if you'll go after Germany, we'll back you and we'll get Roosevelt and all of his followers and supporters and advisors. We'll sucker them into the war, too. We'll get both the United States and Britain to go after Germany. And that's what happened. Yeah.
Yeah, so. And like you say, just in the last couple of minutes there, and who is it that was behind Churchill? I mean, it was a Jewish thing.
No, so I thought it was the Irish. Okay, maybe you're right. Okay.
It was the Eskimos.
The Eskimos. Those nasty.
those bad igloos. Eskimos.
They wanted igloos on Miami Beach, and that's why they suckered us into the war.
They sure as hell did.
Oh, that's it.
Oh, gosh.
Well, I have learned so much from you in this hour here, Gene, that it's just fantastic, and I really look forward to you know, learning lots more from you in future programs like this.
And well, thank you very much. I enjoy Eddie giving us the chance to talk about factual history, because it's so little of what you see today on television or in the news media, and anybody that speaks factual history online or anything, since the government controls all these big online companies, you get censored and kicked off of that. So, you know, programs like Blood River Radio and your programs that you're going to have coming up, that's the only source that people have for factual information. And don't beat yourself up too bad about you didn't learn all of this about the South and the cause of the war and everything. We didn't learn it when I was in grade school either, you know, and it takes, you have to go outside the approved sources to try to find out what happened. And
so you don't say you were like re-educated, just like the Germans were re-educated?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, I had to. And had to find out. And I had, you know, and just like you did, my family, my ancestors served in the Confederate Army. I think four of my eight great-great-grandfathers, I know for a fact, served in the Confederate Army. And they were poor people. They didn't own slaves. But Tennessee was going to be invaded.
We could talk a whole hour on that, the slavery issue and who was running the slave trade and how many people owned slaves and who were the main owners and all that. But when I said back to the point about being re-educated, I was putting that in quotation marks, as in a la George Orwell style, like the, in German, there's a word Umerziehung, which is a little bit different from re-educate. It's Umerziehung means like you were, a different point of view was brought about. But of course, this is all the deceptions that we learned in our
exactly.
Public
thank you, Monica.
System.
It's always an honor to be on the program with you. I love it.
Well,
thank you.
Conversely with you too, and thanks, Eddie. And
well, thank you.
It's been great.
Thank y'all too. Thank you, Sister Monica. Thank you, Brother Gene. It's been a dynamite hour. I thought it was a great program today. I really do. And I'd like to thank Little Lizzie for making this broadcast go out flawlessly. And I'd like to thank the Blood River Radio family for keeping us on air. And, real people, same time, same place next week. I guess it'll be the 26th, I guess, this being a recorded show. But I've got to go to that wedding, and I'll see y'all about a week, about 10 days. Well, good night, everybody.